And we have Bernie Kosar with us for the first of his two weekly visits here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Bernie, how was your holiday weekend, brother?
Great holiday weekend.
Good. And also now to get back into the draft groove, we are the countdown, you know, continues as we move ever closer to the 26th. And it's interesting, when you think you might have some clarity about this whole situation, and I'm not even sure that this even counts as clarity, but Trent Richardson had allegedly been tweeting his affection for the possibility of becoming a Cleveland Browns player until, lo and behold, it turns out that that was a phony Twitter account that was generating all this talk and had, you know, had people kind of, oh, he's you know, saying the right things, because there does seem to be, at least in public, unscientifically, a sense among Browns fans that that's the guy they want to see it for. But, again, it was somebody else pretending to be him.
Well, I find technology, of which I'm still resisting some of it, somewhat funny in the way people could really pretend to be somebody else and hide behind other things. And you know what, though? When it comes to the draft, you know, we're really getting to the point where you really talked ad nauseum about the first few picks of the draft, the first 4, 5, 6, 10 guys in the draft, and you really end up reaching for things to discuss and probably overanalyze right now. And I think people are so excited about the potential with the two picks in the first round, three of the first 37. They're so excited about the potential to really grow the team and get the team better that, you know, you kind of grasp at things like this. But at the end of the day, it's if it wasn't a fraudulent thing, even if it was accurate, the player doesn't have a lot of say-so right now, and it's up to the team. But guys, no matter what people say, guys tend to want to get picked as early as possible from a financial consideration standpoint and from a competitive standpoint. So I think any of those guys would be incredibly excited about being the fourth pick in the draft.
Yeah, that's what that ties into. And, you know, you mentioned technology and how you can hide behind things. There was an NFL schedule going around last week and purported to be the leaked version of the schedule that has not yet been announced by the NFL. And that, too, proved to be a phony. And I guess the person who generated it, like, fessed up to putting it out there and that it was basically made up. But it was so amazing how many friends and people that we both know that were all over this, maybe either hoping it was the schedule or complaining already about the way certain games were positioned on that. And again, you know, we're just talking about a bogus schedule, but that became news too.
Yeah, and again, the getting ready for those type situations probably are even could be potentially even a little more challenging / troublesome, because the popularity of the league and the excitement of it and the way people plan their Sundays, plan their weekends, plan their weeks around their given teams and their favorite team, and especially certain rivalry games, that I found it sad that some people were actually had trips planned and vacations planned already off of a bogus fake schedule.
I know. No, you're right. And it is sad, because that's real investment in time and plans and maybe even expense too to do that. But yeah, the moral of the story is wait for the league to announce it, because that is exactly what the Browns and every other team in the NFL does. They wait. There are the way the system's designed, and I can speak from the standpoint of having worked for NFL.com and NFL Network, that is so protected, so highly guarded. When it does get out or is distributed, it's distributed at a very careful, you know, in a very careful way to get, you know.
And it's been highly thought through and highly looked at and checked. And I think the only people that weren't waiting for the bad news, NFL to release stuff, was the Saints. They just got their appeal, I think, denied.
Yeah, it was. The commissioner upheld it. No big surprise with that at all. Visiting with Bernie Kosar, as we always do here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Bernie, back to the point of what could happen at four. Again, I think the fascination is that so many different things could happen that you can't make, I don't think, the argument that, that overrides any other for Trent Richardson or Morris Claiborne or Justin Blackmon or the possibility of Matt Khalil even being there if, in fact, the Vikings are serious about trading out of that spot, as their GM, Rick Spielman, has indicated, you know, that was possible. And it's just telling to me that, again, the gamesmanship and whatever, you know, he, for whatever reason, he wants to make it clear that, hey, they'd be open for business too if the right team wanted to move to three for some reason, to do whatever, get ahead of the Browns or something for a certain player, and that maybe again a Matt Khalil falls into the picture for Cleveland. So I think with the, with that list of players and the various pluses and minuses that each has, of Claiborne, Khalil, Richardson, Blackmon, you would sit here and say, okay, it's probably one of those guys if you're staying at four, and even if you're moving down a couple spots, it could still be one of those guys. But it just tells me once again that the closer we get to the draft, the less of a conviction, at least from my mind, that you can have for any single guy.
Yeah, that's absolutely, and again, even to maybe a deeper point too would be, I think there's a lot of energy that needs to be put into it, that really you start looking at the depth of certain positions. So if you have Trent Richardson, how much depth of top tier, first, second, third round type running backs are there available in the draft after that? How many Justin Blackmon, how many other top tier receivers, potential playmaking receivers are there in the first, second, third round? Again, and we remember, again, Mike Wallace, a third-round pick. I think just about any NFL team would be happy with Mike Wallace being a draft pick for them and one of their type receivers on their given team. So a lot of teams sometimes pick, although everyone says they wanted, this is the best player available, we had him rated on our board as the best player. I think some teams really take a look at the overall depth in the following rounds to see if, hey, maybe I don't take the running back or the receiver here at this round. I may be able to get another guy in the upcoming rounds later to kind of help fill in my roster. And I think some of that thinking goes into it.
And then we look at some history, too. And I know you can go back to 2007, and although the Browns clearly did a great thing by adding Joe Thomas to the roster with that particular first-round pick, when they also could have gone with Adrian Peterson, who proves to be a tremendous player, but when in a dynamic difference maker for the Vikings. But I mean, no complaints about having Joe Thomas on this team. But it underscores to me the idea that you still, even despite where Peterson was taken as a first rounder, what was he, seventh overall to the Vikings the year that Thomas was third overall to the Browns, that you still don't need to invest so heavily in a running back. And, you know, Arian Foster is sort of the poster child of that, as being undrafted in 2009, and so many other players taken in that 50, 60 overall range. You know, you look at a Michael Turner at what was he, 154 in 2004. I mean, the idea is that there's just, you can still get good running backs in those later portions, or not draft them at all and get them as undrafted players.
Well, here's another thing, talking about history, is there was a fantastic / humbling, eye-opening article that Terry Pluto wrote, I think, over the weekend.
Yes.
About, look at the history of the fourth pick and the 22nd pick. And he had shown, like, Adam Curry, who was a can't-miss backer, tweener, guy that went to Seattle, got traded for basically nothing to Oakland this year. McFadden, the history of the fourth-round picks, and then even somewhat scarier, the history of the 22nd picks in the first round. So I think it really shows, what that article shows me and what that history shows me, is sometimes having quantity is probably the surest way to success in the draft, because, like we've said many a times in the last couple months leading up to this draft, there's the best pickers, drafters that are Hall of Fame material really don't even bat 50% in drafting guys in the first few rounds. Right. Not even 50%. And if you look at, again, that article and that history, yeah, you could say A.J. Green worked out good.
Yeah.
But for every A.J. Green,
yeah, there's an Aaron Curry. Drafted by Seattle.
So there's those type things. So that sometimes having the extra picks gives you a little luxury because everybody makes mistakes with these things, and it just shows that history has showed it. And again, being able to just kind of limit your exposure and try to limit the mistakes and try to make sure you get a guy when you know he's a player, I think it's really imperative.
Yeah, no, great piece by Terry Pluto and the Plain Dealer, the one you're referring to over the weekend. We've got much more coming up with Bernie Kosar on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Stick around for more on ESPN 850 WKNR. Back with Bernie Kosar. And Bernie, one of the things that you mentioned in our previous segment with regard to the news of the day, the commissioner, this wasn't a shock, but the commissioner holding up the appeal of the Saints and in particular of Sean Payton and company, their appeal of their suspensions. And again, we fully expected this to be the case, but now that the reality of it is there, it tells me that maybe as this story progresses, the thing that we're still looking and waiting to see is what the decision will be on players and how the league will be able to arrive at a decision on these guys, again, who were acting on orders and instructions from the people who have been punished.
Yeah, and even more like shocking to me was really listening to the audio that was incredibly released last week. Again, hearing it over the weekend, I'm not really sure. I know I've never heard speeches to that level, to that specific level, ever. And again, I'm not trying to be an apologist for the players. I'm not trying to be an excuse maker for them. I'm not trying to cover for them. But it's almost like, and again, not that with the war in Iraq and Afghanistan, don't want to compare football to war.
No.
But you have an element of leadership and not questioning the judgment of your superiors. And when you're a coach, that constantly and that consistently and that definitively is talking about things like that, for I find it really hard for the masses of players to be put in that situation. I try to put myself in that situation if I was trying to make an NFL team, trying to hang on to a team, trying to be part of a group. I mean, trying to say, what decision would I have made, could I have made about that type of situation? And I think that's really a tough spot for some of these players to be in.
No doubt. And it's also opened the doors to some other questions that I've started pondering, and I've heard others do the same, about how injuries are going to be reported in-game. And it's always a little bit of a dicey thing when teams announce injuries and what they're exactly, you know, the specific injury and such, and the reluctance to do so because how that information can be used against a player by the opposition, right, to target that injury, and that being the basic reason for it. But you wonder now if this is opening the door, or if the whole bounty situation now opens the door to greater concern about that very topic.
Well, no doubt about it. I mean, I think that's something where how it's handled is definitely in the interest not only of just the given players that are probably being looked at and scrutinized, but all the players in the league, all the young kids, like how coaches are going to coach up younger kids, high school kids, college kids, play Pop Warner football. You know, this is going to have ramifications across so many different levels and so many different areas of football that a lot of real thought, I know it's going into it, but there's a whole lot of thought I think that's got to go in consideration that's got to go into this as to how it's handled, because so many different groups are going to be affected by this.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. The way it's going to change, it causes us to rethink how things have been done, procedures. And look, it's the whole thing about announcing injuries in game, just like announcing injuries during the week, is full disclosure. It's the whole gambling aspect that the NFL worries about, that culture, and try to not have any inside information, available or whatever, or create the climate for that. So you put everything out there and put it up front. But if during the game now that you think an opponent might be targeting a specific player for the reasons that happened in the course of this whole bounty thing, again, it's something that I know the first time I hear it in a press box, and I've been around this game for so long that it becomes second nature to hear announcements. So-and-so suffered a whatever, knee injury, return is questionable, return is doubtful, whatever it might be, or is out for the game. But those are the types of things now that this, this makes you think twice about it.
Oh, absolutely. And again, I know there's a physical component to the game and an economic component to the sport that you can't ignore. And part of why the sport, I think, has become so popular is the physical toughness of it that you need to play it and survive it and be good at it. It's something that is entertaining and fun to be a part of. It's fun to watch. It's one of the exciting things. But in terms of when you cross the line and you start doing things where, again, Greg Williams being on tape the day before the game saying, I know he has a knee injury, let's isolate and purposely go for the ACL like that to blow his knee out, knowing what we know today about concussions and the early signs of dementia and things of that nature, and to know a guy's had concussion issues and to mandate that every player on every play, every time, gets a piece of his head, takes a shot at it. That's just barbaric to me. And that, again, that crosses the level of fairness, fun, good stuff that I think the NFL has going for it.
Oh, great, great points there. Bernie Kosar joining us, as he always does here, on Cleveland Browns Daily. It's driven by Liberty Ford. So, Bernie, as we look around the league, an interesting situation developing in Kansas City, where Romeo Crennel, of course, former Browns coach, is now the head coach there, and not really sure if he's embracing. I had a chance to visit with him at the league meetings recently down in Florida a couple of weeks ago, but not really sure if he's embracing the idea of Matt Cassel being the guy there. You know, if he truly, Romeo, if he truly thinks that that's the right quarterback for that team, talked about wanting to see more consistency from him. What's your take on Cassel?
Well, I don't want to take away from the season he had in New England, but we talk about inexperience. We talk about Tannehill only playing 19 games. Well, Cassel played even less and had the one season in New England, was behind Matt Leinart in college, so really he's never played. And he ended up being, and to show you how the league wanted quarterbacks, that sought after the year he was the unrestricted free agent. I think that it's definitely showing that Kansas City is going to take a look at a quarterback. I'm not saying in the first round, but relatively early, because they tried hot and heavy. I mean, when their owner, Lamar Hunt, said, we want Peyton Manning also, they were out in that sweepstakes too. And I think they're going to be definitely looking to kind of find lightning in a bottle, like Scott Pioli did with what he did in New England. And he may be trying to do that again in Kansas City to, if nothing more, bring some competition to the spot, because – they were dreadful last year at certain times at their backup quarterback position.
Well, Bernie, good stuff as always. We will catch up with you at the end of the week, my friend.
Sounds good. Have a great week.
All right. He is Bernie Kosar, the one and only, joining us here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, brought to you by Madden NFL 12, EA Sports. It's in the game.